Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. I'm John Hansen. A happy Saturday to you. Our next guest has a long litany of things that he has done. He's a lawyer, kind of a renaissance man in many ways. He also has produced plays on Broadway, and I'm reading through Donald Clark Jr.'s bio. And Donald, when I get to the part that I love the most, is that you co-own the Chicago Magic Lounge, which I got to go to many times before the pandemic. First of all, welcome to WGN. And second, is it doing okay right now, Donald?
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me on the show. Yes, the Magic Lounge is doing okay. In fact, we're looking forward to reopening Monday night. That will be the start of reopening our doors to our patrons and delivering Chicago Magic to the city.
I am not even kidding, and I know we're going to talk about your book and much more important things. Well, not really, but I mean, you know what I mean. Like the Magic Lounge. If you've never been there, and obviously they're, as you just heard, reopening Monday. The decor is so cool. It features in your face magic or close up magic. I'm sure Donald could describe it better than I could. It's just, then there's a big show. It's just so well put together, and you guys do such a great job there.
Well, you're very kind, John. It's a passion project for us, and we've been well received, and we look forward to getting back to entertaining audiences beginning Monday.
Sounds good. All right. Well, what I really brought you on to talk about was Summary Judgment, your first book, the story of, when you did this incredible case of 20-year-old Tommy Hamilton. First of all, can you give us a little bit of the background of his case in Alabama in the summer of 1984 up until the point that you met and worked with Tommy?
Absolutely. So on July 11 of 1984, then 20-year-old Tommy Hamilton shot and killed 59-year-old county official Lehman Wood in the Bankhead National Forest in Lawrence County, Alabama. A jury unanimously found Tommy guilty of murder during a robbery, and by a vote of 10-2, recommended that the judge sentence him to death. Judge Billy C. Burney then did exactly that and sentenced Tommy to die by electrocution. Under Alabama law, all death sentences must be reviewed by higher courts, and both the Alabama Court of Criminal Appeals and the Alabama Supreme Court unanimously affirmed Tommy's capital conviction and death sentence, and the United States Supreme Court declined a petition to review his case. It was shortly after the United States Supreme Court declined to review Tommy's case that I volunteered to be his attorney and represent him in post-conviction proceedings.
Okay, but why? I mean, you're a Chicago lawyer. His guilt wasn't in doubt, correct? I mean, he shot the guy, right?
He did. Tommy was guilty. The American Bar Association at that time had recently begun and continues to this day a post-conviction death penalty representation project. And what the project basically does is, while you're guaranteed to have an attorney to represent you during trial and appeals in a criminal case, if you can't afford one, you're not entitled to have an attorney provided for post-conviction proceedings, which are basically habeas corpus proceedings to challenge the constitutionality of the proceedings that happened before.
So you're entitled to your normal appeal process, like, oh, I didn't have a good defense, or I thought that this wasn't presented correctly to the trial jury, but you weren't able to petition the idea, or you weren't able to have representation insured if you were challenging the constitutionality of the sentence in which you received.
Or things that happen during the guilt phase of the trial.
Oh, okay.
You need to bring up either evidence that wasn't available, newly discovered evidence, or challenge the competence of the attorneys that represented you in the original proceedings. You can't, in effect, raise issues that were or could have been raised during those earlier proceedings.
Okay. All right. The Bar Association has this project where they're going to try and offer more representation, and that's how you learned about his case and jumped on?
Yeah, basically the ABA litigation section wrote to all its members and said, we know that some people are in favor of the death penalty and some people are opposed to it, but as lawyers, we all should be supportive of the notion that if you have a legal right available to you, you ought to have meaningful access to that right. And so they asked for lawyers to volunteer on a pro bono basis to represent these folks that have been convicted and sentenced to death so that they have legal representation for, in effect, their last appeal before a sentence is carried out.
Okay, so you decide to take on the case. You meet with him. What are you start learning about the case that gives you some grounds to try and get this conviction, or not the conviction, but or the conviction and the sentence overturned?
Well, through a lot of hard work and interviewing a lot of witnesses, we ended up discovering that law enforcement had presented perjured testimony from an inmate that had secretly agreed to release from jail if that inmate testified against Tommy. And we also discovered that the prosecution had made arguments to the jury that were unsupported by facts, and that Tommy's court-appointed defense attorney was a suffering alcoholic who failed to adequately represent him during his trial. So we brought those issues to the attention of the judge and argued that Tommy's conviction and his sentence were both constitutionally flawed and that he was entitled to a new trial and new sentencing hearing if convicted again.
Did you ever have any doubts about what you were doing in defending a man that you knew shot and killed someone else?
No, because I think that the conviction of innocence is not the only possible flaw in a criminal justice system, and that we shouldn't be hostile or even indifferent to other types of injustice. So to deny anyone robust defense, even someone who may be factually guilty, would be to put everyone's liberty at risk.
I am fascinated by where this case goes, and I know that everyone should buy the book. We're going to have, I guess, some spoilers is the way to put it, because I know our audience will want to know what happened after that. The book is called Summary Judgment, and everyone should buy it and read it, no matter what, if we spoil a few of the things along the way. Donald Clark is the author. I'm going to put you on hold, Donald Clark, really quickly, and we're going to take a commercial break here on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. Chatting with Donald Cameron Clark, author of Summary Judgment, a legal memoir. And Donald, you're also a member of the Illinois State Bar Association.
I am. I have been for my entire career. I graduated from law school in 1979, and it's been a wonderful relationship with the ISBA.
We're talking about the book and the story of 20-year-old Tommy Hamilton, who shot and killed his boss in the summer of 1984. He goes through many different appeals processes, all fail, until Donald Cameron Clark, who we're talking with right now, another lawyer and a Alabama nun get involved. It's an interesting team.
It was an interesting team. My partner at the time, Luke DeGrand, and I, of course, were practicing law in Chicago and representing Fortune 500 companies in a lot of civil cases. And when we got assigned the case in Alabama, we told the American Bar Association that we just absolutely had to have local counsel to help us. And they told us that one of the challenges in finding local counsel is that usually those lawyers that represent these folks on death row that have been convicted and sentenced, there's a stigma attached to it, and so there's a reluctance to volunteer. But they eventually told us that they had found us a lawyer in Alabama who would help us, and that was Lynn McKenzie. They then told us it was Sister Lynn McKenzie, who's a Benedictine nun, and she turned out to be not only a valuable asset on the team, but over time a really good friend.
This, not to make light of what obviously is a very serious situation, this is starting to sound like the plot of My Cousin Vinny. These judges or these lawyers coming down from a big city down to Alabama, down to the South.
Well, I will tell you that we were extremely fortunate to have the judges on the bench that heard this case that we did. They were very smart. They were thoughtful. They listened to our arguments. And eventually, I believe, reached the decision that was the right one in this case. In fact, the judge that wrote the opinion for the appellate court in our case went on to become the first female Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court. That's Justice Sue Bell Cobb.
So you teased it there, the right verdict, you say, or the right ruling. His conviction and death sentence were overturned. Was that shocking, surprising? Did it make huge headlines locally?
It's very rare for such an outcome to occur, especially when the argument is not one based on innocence, but rather on constitutional defect. And it was hard won because we originally presented the case to a trial-level judge, and he ruled that the perjury we had presented did in fact occur, but he found that it only affected the sentencing phase of the proceedings and not the guilt phase. So he affirmed the capital conviction of murder, but originally awarded us just a new sentencing hearing.
Mm.
Well, in Alabama, there are only two possible sentences for a capital murder conviction, and that's either death or life imprisonment without any possibility of parole. And our client, Tommy Hamilton, made it clear to us from the outset the only thing he feared more than the electric chair was spending the rest of his life in prison. And so that was not a victory as far as our client was concerned. So we appealed to the appellate court and argued that the perjury really tainted all the proceedings and that a new trial needed to occur.
Instead of a new trial, he ended up settling, right? Agreeing to a conviction of murder, but with the possibility of parole, which he then had.
That's exactly right, John. We entered into a plea agreement in which he pled guilty to the crime of murder as opposed to capital murder and agreed to a life with possibility of parole sentence with the understanding that he wouldn't be considered for parole until he had served an additional 7 years in prison. He'd already served seven at that point in time. So basically he was agreeing to a minimum of 14 years. He ended up serving 20 years before the Alabama Board of Pardon and Paroles granted him parole, and that happened in 2006.
To someone listening that says you helped, you know, I'm with you on the constitutional basis, right, about the death penalty. I'm with you that perhaps, you know, some things had happened wrong, but you have a murderer now that has been released from jail. That's not something you should be proud of. What would you say to that listener?
Well, I know that sometimes folks ask me, don't I feel like, in effect, I was the driver of a getaway car? But it's my point of view that insisting that law enforcement not suborn perjury, ensuring that the prosecution discloses favorable evidence to the defense that's material to guilt or punishment, and challenging whether or not constitutionally required effective assistance of counsel has been provided, that these are efforts to guarantee that constitutional principles will be upheld not only in a given case, but in every case. And so ensuring that criminal proceedings are free of constitutional defect is as much a criminal defense attorney's job as arguing about factual guilt or innocence.
In your opinion, should federal death sentences and other ones across states be abolished?
Well, I do believe that the death penalty should be abolished legislatively or as a result of an evolving standard of decency be declared unconstitutional. The utilitarian justifications such as incapacitation or deterrence are either unsubstantiated or they can be achieved through incarceration. And I just believe that the retributive extinction of a human life cannot be morally justified.
It's a really interesting story, and I just love the book really breaks down kind of the behind-the-scenes look of it all. I think that people that are interested in how that all works, the discussions that are had with clients and with other, lawyers and judges and all that, it's a really interesting read. And Donald Clark, before I let you go, I got to ask, because I'm reading your bio, you were executive producer of an award-winning feature film, Guest Artist, which was written and starred by Jeff Daniels. You produced plays on Broadway and regional theater. Well, is there anything else out there that you want to do before? I mean, like, you doing everything.
Well, in addition to looking forward to reopening the Chicago Magic Lounge, I can tell you and your listeners that I will be producing a play here in Chicago, When Harry Met Rehab. Will be starting performances at the Greenhouse Theater on November 24.
That's great. Where do you find the time?
It keeps me busy when I'm not enjoying my 7 grandchildren.
That's great. Summary Judgment. You can read more about it, and it's a really great story. Donald Cameron Clark, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, John. I appreciate it.
We appreciate you, too.